I'm Audrey Tracy.
And I'm Griff, and this is Selling on eBay, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. So, Audrey, what's the theme for this week's episode?
Does your inventory stack up?
Well, I think it does. I often wonder, though. Most of it really isn't listed. It's still in my garage. So what's this week's theme?
No, that's the theme.
What is?
Does your inventory stack up? That's the theme.
Oh, sorry. What an idiot. I was confused.
All your life. So we have two guests this week. First, we'll speak with eBay seller Joey Ruffalo, who will share how he evaluates his inventory. That's our main story for this week. What have you got, Griff?
Well, for our Inside eBay segment, we'll continue with the theme. I'll talk to Gordon Chang. He's on the merchandise team here at eBay, and he too has some perspective from the inside about how a seller can best evaluate her inventory and what steps to consider based on the results of that evaluation.
And we also have a call and an email to read from two sellers. Finally!
I know, huh? I'm so excited. It sounds like we have a real show this week. Shall we proceed?
Absolutely. Coming up first, the main story. Welcome to the main story. Today we're going to chat with Joey Ruffalo, an eBay seller and professional financial planner, about two important topics: reviewing your business performance in 2018 and inventory. Welcome, Joey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell us who you are and what you do.
So my name is Joey Ruffalo. I'm an eBay seller. My wife and I have a top-rated eBay store, Favorite Treasures and More. We've been selling online on eBay since 2000. But since about the last 2 years is when we actually went full-time with the store, and just been loving everything that we do with eBay. It's been great. I'm also a financial planner. I have my MBA in financial planning from Cal Lutheran University. The reason I got into financial planning is a few years ago, my wife and I had a separate business that we run that was affected pretty harshly by the market in the recession in 2008-2009. We got ourselves into a little bit of trouble, and when we pulled ourselves out of it, I realized that I needed to help other people not feel alone like we felt while we were going through our struggles. So I decided to career transition into financial planning, and while I was finishing up my financial planning is when we started selling a lot on eBay, and I started noticing a lot of the groups and online focus groups and these Facebook groups and stuff where a lot of questions are being asked and a lot of misinformation that was out there. And so I wanted to make sure that the answers were answered correctly. And so I started focusing on small business and eBay e-commerce as my niche in financial planning. But I do all sorts of financial planning with debt management, budgeting, saving for college, anything like that. But my main goal, my main focus is eBay sellers.
First of all, thanks for being with us since 2000. That's a good tenure on eBay. And I find it really interesting that you have this niche, right? You're giving financial planning advice to eBay sellers. So let's jump right into that. We've been talking about 2018. So when it comes to reviewing last year, what are some key metrics that sellers should be tracking?
So for us personally, what I would do is you start with year to year. That's the easiest thing. So we've been online for a long time, so we can keep track from this year to last year, the year before. I can go back as far as, you know, 2004 and see what we sold if we were active enough then, just to kind of get an idea of our profits and our margins and stuff. If you're pretty new, I would just start really small, start month to month or even week to week. And as you grow, then you can progress out further with your ranges. Some things we look for is you can track this all under Seller Hub. It's a great tool. I love Seller Hub. Performance tab, you can go to your active listings, whether it increased or decreased your percent number. We've noticed recently that there's definitely a direct correlation between the higher amount you list, the more you list, the active you are, and your sales. So you can kind of see if your seller percentage, oh, I've listed more this month and my sales went up. Perfect. It's a great, definitely a direct correlation there. Also look at your traffic and your impressions. What's your click-through rate? What's your sales conversion rate? Because you might be listing stuff and not selling it, and you want to figure out why. I also track shipping times and our defect rates. Being a top-rated seller means that we save money on fees, so I make sure those numbers are in line and we never miss our top-rated discount, because it's good business practice, but it's also good financial practice and it saves you money.
Excellent. Now let's talk about traffic and click-through and conversion rates. Do you track those over time to understand what is a good impression rate for your kinds of listings? Because those are kind of all over the map, right? Impressions for a pre-owned blouse is going to be different than a tractor.
Yeah, so we in our store, we just sell a variety of items. We have a lot of one-offs. So it's hard for me to compare apples to apples. Is a different t-shirt going to sell different than another t-shirt because it's not exactly the same? But I mostly look at how long things have been listed in the store, and then I compare that with the impressions. So if I'm not getting a lot of impressions on something that's listed long, I have to go back and look at it and see what I did wrong with it. And it's not wrong to admit that you did something wrong, because ultimately we all did something wrong.
And then so, you go back in and revise the listing.
Yeah, well, yeah, for sure. Revise it, look at it, maybe take new photos, check the title, put it on a discount, stuff like that.
Look at competitors. What are they doing? Mm-hmm. Okay, now getting back to reviewing 2018, what insight can a profit and loss statement offer about your business?
All right, so profit and loss statement is just that, right? We refer to it as the P&L. I think we referred to that in the last episode as well, right?
Yep.
So basically, it summarizes your revenues, your expenses, and costs during a specific period. So typically, yearly, you can break them down to quarterly. You can do this if you want to compare fourth quarters from previous years in the past, or you want to compare certain months. You can definitely get your, how did I do this September compared to last September? Essentially, what it does is allows you to see if you can make a profit. And there's two ways you can make a profit. Well, essentially, three ways you can make a profit is you either have to increase your revenue, cut your costs, or do both. Simply put, basically, revenue minus expenses is your net income. And we generate revenue from sales to pay our expenses. And what's left over is our net income. It's pretty easy to make a profit and loss statement. You can just write it down on a piece of paper. You basically put your revenue on top. You subtract your cost of goods sold, and then that's your gross profit. From there, you subtract all your expenses, and you get your operating profit. That's what you're taxed on. So taxes minus your operating profit is your net income or your overall profit. This is your salary, essentially, if you're a sole proprietor business.
And you mentioned that the ways to maximize your P&L is basically reduce costs or increase revenue. Do you have any advice on reducing costs?
Yeah, so basically you want to look for, if you're a one-off shopper that shops at the thrift stores or shops at Goodwill or any of those locations, you know, maximize sales days, cut the cost down on items that way. Yard sales, you know, negotiate, cut the cost down there. If you're more into the replenishables market where you get the same item over and over again, you may want to go back to your distributor and see if you can strike a better deal with them, see if you can get your cost per unit down. If you can't, then otherwise you're going to have to increase your price. And that might not always be in line with what the market is telling you on that certain product.
Right.
So you have to then decide if that's a good product to sell because, again, your profit margins in that are pretty low.
Always be renegotiating with your suppliers. Always asking for a discount. I love it.
On eBay, that's why they have the best offer on eBay. Buyers want the best deal and sellers, we want to make the most money.
Any advice for how to set 2019 financial goals for small business owners? What should they be focused on?
So we've all heard the old motto, keep it simple, stupid, or the KISS method, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I like to do. You don't have to be fancy with all your stuff. You just keep it simple. Simple works, and you won't get confused and bogged down. We want to make sure, basically, that our numbers are going up, right? The goal of being in business is to make a profit and to stay in business. We want to make sure our numbers are going up and not down. If they're going down, we want to make sure that we know where they're going down from and be able to get in there and fix it. That being said, a good goal for sellers to look for, or any sort of small business in that matter, is about a 7 to 10% per year growth. You want to outpace inflation. And we all hear about inflation and the value of the dollar and everything else. That's roughly about 2% a year. So basically, if you hear somebody say what something cost in the past and what it costs now, your price is going up to kind of match inflation. One fun example is you can go online and just find an inflation calculator and see what a dollar was in, say, 2016 and what it is today. So, for example, in 2016, $1 is worth $1.05 now. So you need $1.05 today's money to buy something that was $1 in 2016. What that means in the eBay world or e-commerce world is you have something listed for a longer amount of time in your store. You can either subscribe to the good till canceled method or the 30 days relist method, or however you want to run your inventory. But you have to remember when you first listed that item, because if it's listed longer than you like it for, you might have to adjust the price higher as opposed to lower.
Right.
Because you have to spend more money on that now than what it was in the past. So if you sell it for $10 today, that same item 4 years from now, that $10 is worth less than it is today because of inflation.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So the call to action here is if you've got something that's been on the site for a long time and it has not sold, you might want to look at a couple of things, right?
Yes.
Number one, why hasn't it sold? Is there an opportunity to optimize the listing with photos or a better description, et cetera? But you also might want to rethink your pricing, factoring in inflation.
Yeah. So I for pricing, I always look at other sellers sold online, like Google searches or other services that have like longer sold terms and stuff like that. And I use all those to kind of get a good price. I don't always have to be the top of the line, the highest seller. I also don't want to be the lowest seller.
Right. You want to be competitive and middle to upper in the pack, right?
Exactly. But again, that's for me and my margins. Again, it's something a little different, off topic a little bit. But if I had a shirt that I want to sell for $20 and everybody else is selling it between 15 and 30 and I'm right in the middle, but I spent $10 on it and you spent a dollar on it, you could sell that shirt for $15 and make a good profit. Well, I have to sell it for a lot more to make the same percentage.
Okay, now let's switch over to inventory. How should sellers be evaluating the performance of their inventory, i.e. identifying winners and losers in their inventory mix?
This is perfect because this is just a great timing for this because we've just totally revamped our store recently. Pay close attention to how long you have an item listed for. We just talked about that. We have a premium store. We have the 1,000 free listing store. And so it costs about $60 a month for that store. You have to think about utilizing all your listings. So a lot of people don't use all 1,000 listings. So if you use all 1,000 listings, for example, you're paying about 6 cents a listing, roughly. So think of, I like to think of each listing as shelf space in a virtual store, right? Mm-hmm. You're renting that space for 6 cents a month. So each month that that item sits, you're spending 6 cents on that item to sit there. So in a year, it's only like, you know, 72 cents or whatever it is. It's not much. But if it sits for a longer period of time, you have to then take that cost into consideration on your item, whether or not you want to raise it to cover the cost to list it, or you want to just cut bait on it because it's costing you too much money. Now, there's some people that don't use all 1,000 listings in the store, so their cost per listing is higher. So if you use 500 listings, you're spending 12 cents a listing on an item. If you're relisting that item a few times, then you're spending a lot more in that month on that item. So it just gets to be costly, and you have to think about your margins again and what you bought the item for and how much you can absorb of just having it sit there. What we like to do in our store or in our thing is I use custom field for just about everything. So in custom field, I use where I bought the item from, how much I bought it for, the date I listed it is there, and where I'm storing it in my storage. This way I can sort that field. I know what's been on long. I know what I paid for it. So if somebody gives me a best offer, I can immediately look at it and go, yeah, it's a great deal. It's a great profit. I'll take that. I know where it's kept. And like I said, I know when I listed it. So we had a lot of items in our store where we were 300, I want to say about 300 days, but they were the 30-day good till canceled. So it looks like a fresh listing all the time. And our start date was really long. It was like 300 days. So we took all those down, set them to auction, cut the price. When the auctions ended, listed them back up on 30-day good till canceled. That was about a month ago. And our last 90 items we've sold 75 of them have been these old items that have just been sitting in our store. That doesn't necessarily mean your old items are duds. It just means you have to like look at them and fix them and play with them and put them on Promotions Manager and use all the tools that are there because they're not necessarily losers. So we turn all these losers into winners.
To summarize, you're really looking at time on site and you're also factoring in the cost of those listings. Like you said, virtual shelf space in a store, for instance. So if you start getting to where the listing has been on the site for so long that it's actually costing you significant dollars to list it, you might want to take down that listing, rejigger it, experiment with auction, maybe. Maybe this is good for an auction, and then maybe relist it later.
Correct. Play with your listings. You have, especially with the stores, you have so many fixed price and so many auction available to you. Play with them all. I mean, they give them to you to use, so use them and figure out stuff with that.
Yeah, and it's probably pretty easy to identify winners, right? Because they're flying out the door. Have you ever found a winner, Joey, that you wish you had more of?
Yeah, I've had a few items where we listed it and sold it within like 10 minutes of it going live and realized like, oh man, did I underprice that? We had a bunch of stuff on it. There was a store that had a closeout and we bought one or two items from the closeout and it sold pretty quickly. So I went back and I bought a few more. They didn't sell as quickly as the first one, so I was like, I'm not going to go back and buy any more. I'll wait for these to sell. It's fine. Eventually, those sold, so I went back to buy more, and they were sold out. So it's kind of mad that I didn't go buy a whole bunch of them, but oh well.
Well, it's hard to know. I just sold two items in 2 days. That is pretty remarkable for me, but it's also a category I'm not familiar with. So perhaps I made a mistake in undervaluing those. Unfortunately, I can't get any more of them, but it was a free bobblehead that I got at a hockey game. And I had no idea that I could get a free item and sell it for $30, but I did. And now I wish I had more. Okay. Any other thoughts on inventory? How do you manage yours? Like, how do you physically store it and locate an item once it's sold?
Yes. Like I said, I use custom fields for pretty much everything. So I can sort by item location, date I bought it, price I paid, how long it's been on the site. So I use that for the storage of my items. So we keep everything in snap-tight crates. I think Costco had a bunch of them, or Home Depot has a bunch of these really airtight snap crates. Once we list an item, our process is we take photos, we upload them to the site, we build the listing, we set the listing live, and then my wife packs everything up and we put it in envelopes or boxes. So we have the accurate weight, we have the accurate dimensions for our shipping. We put a label on the box and we store it. So when something sells, I just have to immediately go to the box that it's in, pull it out, and it's already in the box ready to go. I personally put an invoice in the box and a thank you card. It's just something I've done for the last 18 years with eBay. I seal it up and print the label and go. So shipping used to take us a really long time because we have to find the item, pack it, find the box for it. Now when somebody buys something, I can get it printed out and shipped within 10 minutes of somebody paying.
Do you pre-pack any of your items?
Oh, yeah, we pre-pack everything.
Okay, now. Great.
It's so much easier because, one, when you're building the listing, you want to make sure you have the accurate weight for shipping because, again, if you don't and you find a different box later on and you have to pay more for shipping, it's just going to cost you money that you didn't expect to pay.
Are you a free shipping guy?
No, we used to be for a little bit, but we do calculated shipping. So that's why the accurate weights are important for me to make sure the customer is paying the right amount and I'm paying the right amount and getting the right discount through eBay's shipping.
That's right. You can't go back on a calculated shipping transaction and tell the buyer that you didn't do the weights and dimensions right and that you need more money. That is not a good buyer experience.
Where, yeah, definitely done that before where it's, when you get right on the verge of that 15-ounce to 1-pound range and you're trying to find it there, but then you realize, I'm just going to have to send a priority. And it's not that much more than what they spent anyway. But if you have to spend any extra money on shipping that you haven't built into your listing or calculated for, then it could cost you in the long run. Now, again, if you're doing free shipping, build the shipping into the price.
Yep.
For sure. Don't buy something that retails for $25 and sell it for $25 and then, oh, I didn't make any money on it.
And also think about what items are good for free shipping and what are not. Generally speaking, items that can go for first class, which is generally around $4 or less, somewhere in there, can go free shipping. But anything bulkier or heavier should probably be calculated. Every seller you will find will have a different opinion on shipping. But generally speaking, you should be careful about what you offer free shipping on.
Yeah, so we do actually have a few items we do free shipping on, but there's some of the larger or the more expensive items that we would sell because I feel bad having somebody spend a ton of money and then charging them shipping. True. Especially when I know I got the item, I'm going to make a ton of money off of it anyway. I could eat a little bit and give them free shipping to help facilitate the sale faster. We do have a couple items we do free shipping on, but the bulk of our items are calculated.
Well, there we go. Okay, we've got to wrap up. Any other advice for eBay sellers out there?
I would just say be careful of your numbers. Know your numbers. Look at your reports. Play around on Seller Hub. It's a great place to go. Performance tab, awesome. There's actually the selling cost tab, which is there too, which is great because it actually breaks down your total net sales. You can look at your eBay fees listed in there. You can kind of see what you're making per month and always make sure you're making more than the last month.
Exactly. Thank you, Joey. Really appreciate your advice.
Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Joey Ruffalo, an eBay seller and professional financial planner.
Coming up next, we chat with one of eBay's merchandisers about how to optimize your inventory mix. Welcome to the Inside eBay segment, and today, as we continue with our theme around reviewing your business, we're going to chat with Gordon Chang from eBay's merchandising team. He's going to share some tips and advice for optimizing your inventory mix. Welcome, Gordon.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for bringing me on the show.
It is our pleasure. So tell us a little bit about your role. What does a merchandiser do at eBay?
Sure. So I'm a category manager at the sports memorabilia and collectibles world. And my main role here is about merchandising, of course, which deals with a lot of inventory and partnering with sellers to optimize their traffic and sales on eBay.
Gordon, as a seller, how can I look back on 2018 and ID my best and worst performing merchandise?
As a seller, you always want to know what's really in the mix of your inventory, and you want to identify the winners and losers. So you look at the sales velocity, right? Like how many items have you sold throughout a time period, let's say a month, and how does that compare to similar items with similar prices across eBay and across all the other marketplaces out there? And then you also want to look at the time on the site. Do you have the listings for like a week? Did it take like a month or like 3 months or 6 months to sell? You definitely want to pay attention to the time as well. And then you do the same thing to identify some of the losers that you have, which means that things have been sitting there for a while, or you actually have to take a really deep, deep, steep discount to get rid of it.
Right? Yeah, and eBay helps with that because if you sign in and look, it'll tell you this item's been sitting here for 16 months. What's wrong with you? Get rid of it.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing. Okay, Gordon, so it's about velocity and time on site. That makes sense. Once you've identified your best and worst performing inventory, what's your next step? How do you optimize your inventory mix?
Sure. So once you have identified your winners and losers from your inventory mix, it is time to decide what type of actions you want to take. For the winners, of course, you want to determine if you can get more from your suppliers. But also, you have to be cognizant about the seasonality, though. Because, for example, if you're in the winter, you're just like coming out of the holiday, you don't want to continue to buy into the, you know, the coats and the boots and everything like that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't make sense to sell those in, you know, the new season. And then also, can you liquidate the not-so-hot items here to free up some warehouse space to get some more cash flow? So you might want to consider doing a markdown or other promotions that get your merchandise moving using some of the tools that we have on eBay.
What about pricing?
Yeah, so pricing is very important too. Like, you never want to just set something up and then forget about it, right?
That's what I do.
Because, you know, pricing is very dynamic nowadays, like consistently changing. So just do your research a little bit to make sure that you stay competitive with your prices.
Let's say I've identified some merchandise, which isn't hard because it's about 90% of what I currently have in my garage, and I want to liquidate it. What's the best way to do that on eBay?
So we do have a pretty cool tool called the Markdown Manager or the Promotion Manager to create some compelling offers. So at the Markdown Manager, there are a lot of creative promotions that you can run. So for example, you can run something like buy one, get one off, or buy one, get one like 50% off, something like, hey, you know what, if you spend $50, and then you can get X amount off of your entire purchase, right? If you sell something that might be bought in bulk, you can also consider doing the volume pricing tool, which is a little bit newer to the site, to offer your customers some discounts if they buy one or more. So it's something as simple as, you know, you buy one at a certain price, but then if you buy two together at the checkout, then you get 5% off your entire purchase.
With the volume pricing tool, that works inside the listing. It doesn't extend across listings, right? So I buy two or more in this listing, I get a discount.
That is correct.
So I could list a bunch of very similar shirts in the same size. Maybe that would work.
Yep.
What else can I do to help liquidate?
Well, I mean, now that you're set on doing some clearance or doing some markdowns on your items, you want to find a way to help advertise it and promote it. Promoted listings would be a good tool. Oftentimes, I would tell my sellers that using the promoted listings and then the promotions manager, those are like the 1-2 punches that we can do to really optimize traffic and your sales. Because it doesn't matter how big of a discount that you put out there, if you don't drive traffic to it, there's really no use. Definitely try to use the promoted listings, and then you pretty much decide how much you want to invest into advertising your products.
So basically, make your items visible using tools like promoted listings. Mm-hmm. And then don't just stop there, but make it enticing inside the listing itself. Revisit your pricing. If what you want to do is liquidate, put a liquidation price on it.
That is correct.
How often should sellers of commodity items like shirts? These are not rare or one-of-a-kind shirts necessarily. How often should we look at our pricing? Is it every week? Is it every month? Every quarter? Every year?
My suggestion is really as often as possible, right? But and then at least once a week, if not daily, honestly, because nowadays, as I mentioned before, like pricing is so dynamic. There's a lot of competitive prices going on.
And people are watching you as a seller as well. So
that is correct.
I noticed that as an example, I list a bottle of cologne. It's new cologne sealed in box. And I thought I put an attractive price. If I'm not paying attention, when I go back to look at that item, maybe 2 days later, I find that somebody else has actually listed it and it's cheaper. Correct. And it wasn't cheaper before. So they're paying attention. So I might have to lower my price by a few pennies.
Yep.
And there's selling opportunities around what we've been calling on the show here, retail moments and cultural moments. Yeah. Can you define those two terms and explain how sellers can take advantage of them?
Absolutely. So retail moments are really the holidays that are predictable, right? Typically involves gifting. You can think about the Valentine's Day that's coming up, Mother's Day, Christmas that have just passed, or the entire season like back to school around really June to August. Mm. For the cultural moments, those are moments that are generally in public thinking that it's the same event. So, for example, new blockbuster movie, the Super Bowl, the Oscars. So those are what we call the cultural moments. And sellers can really take advantage by bringing relevant merchandise up to eBay in advance to really capitalize on these moments to drive more traffic to the listings.
Now, I've heard of something called assortment planning.
Yep.
What the heck is that?
So,
I always think of a Whitman assortment of chocolates. So, take my mind out of dessert and show me where I should be going with assortment planning.
For fellow sellers, right, they have really good mix of inventory. So, when it comes down to a good mix of inventory, you do want to do a lot of assortment planning ahead. I really put it into four different quadrants. You have the basics, which is really low change, but you drive a lot of traffic, a lot of high volume.
And by change, you mean?
I'm talking about like the style doesn't really change much. The pricing doesn't really change much. It's pretty, you know, constant, right? It's a constant basic item that you want to drive in and out. I'm going to do apparel as an example for these four quadrants. So the basics would be your white t-shirts, a plain white t-shirt or something like that, you know. that everybody kind of buys in and out. That is pretty low change. You can't really change a white t-shirt too much.
But there's always people buying them.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
And then, it's a very competitive category.
That's right. And then there's also the trendy items, which is high change, high volume. An example that I can think of like a year ago would be the fidget spinners, right? Those are like the trendy items that trended really well. It was hot, really hot for like the entire summer, plus a couple more months, and then it's out.
Can you even sell them today? I mean, is anyone looking for them?
Fidget spinners, probably not.
Yeah. Like, that came and went.
Okay. Exactly, exactly.
So that's definitely a trending item.
Yep, yep. Then the next one would be a test product, right? Very low volume, but then again, test and learn. So for that, I would say it's the fidget spinner could be a test product too. When you first started in the summer of 2016 or 2017, right? Those are what we call the test products out there. And then the last but not least is really the bucket for unique and special. Those are the products that you probably don't move as much,
right?
But then it doesn't really change as much. And then it's just something that you just wanted to wait and have someone that sparks an interest, maybe due to a cultural moment or something like that. Right. In my world, in sports memorabilia, there's always like a player waiting to pop. So last year in the baseball world, it's really about the rookie sensation, Ohtani. Ohtani for the Angels was a big, big hit. His things could be, there could be unique jerseys from him or unique signed baseball from him that sells all of a sudden and then it just pops.
So we talked about four. You mentioned four different types of items to have in your assortment of inventory. Basics, which are low change, high volume, trendy items, high change, high volume, test products, and unique and special, which are like the collectibles or the sports memorabilia you were talking about before. I can understand having a need to have all of those, but is there guidance to what percentage, how much of the pie you want to slice up between those four? And if so, what are they?
There's really no perfect method or perfect formula for this, right? It really depends on what is the brand of your store, what you want to stand for. If you're like a very trendy store, you definitely don't want a lot of basics. You want to always invest in the trendy items and you want to be ahead of the market and to do the test items and definitely not too many of the unique special, right? But if you're just a regular store, I would invest 30-40% in basics. And then in the trendy items would be another 10-20%, test products as well, like 10-20%, and then the rest would be unique and special.
Okay, that makes sense. And then you test that over time and make adjustments as needed.
Yeah.
Now, say a seller is considering bringing a new product to market. How can they understand the demand before they actually invest in the product itself? How can they predict the demand for that item before they actually put the money into the inventory? That's a big risk. You buy a bunch of stuff and it doesn't sell. Now we are looking at liquidation right off the bat. So you want to avoid that if possible.
That's why you really wanted to test and learn. You do a little research on eBay to see if there's a product out there already. But don't just stick on eBay, right? You want to research on the marketplace in general out there as well in the market and see if this item is already out there. Look at how many different types of similar products you're already selling. Is it already in the market? Is it overly saturated? And if you still want to get into that product, even though you see it everywhere, you're going to have to think about what really separates you from the rest of the market so that people would actually come to you instead of your competitor.
Okay, before we go, I have a game to play with you. So you and I just met in the lobby and we're getting on an elevator to go up to the 100th floor at the eBay building. By the way, there isn't a 100th floor. There's not even a fourth. But we're going up to the 100th floor, so we have some time. And I turn to you just as the door shut and say, hey, you're Gordon Chang. You're that merchandiser from eBay. Can you give me three tips for my business before I get off this elevator?
Definitely. First of all, you don't want to list it and forget it. Continually refine and optimize your listings, right? And then the second one is really utilize the eBay's promotional tools that we have, like Promotions Manager, Promoted Listings, and use Best Offer to really drive conversion and interest to your listings. And then last but not least, right, evaluate your inventory against the volume and change model we discussed to identify your best and worst performers time over time.
Ding, there's the floor. I got to get off here. Hey, it was nice to see you. I'll see you again. I'll push the 200th floor so you can get to your workstation. Thanks, Gordon.
All right. Thank you.
When we're not done, I was just getting off the elevator. Sorry. I want to thank you so much, Gordon, for stopping by. This was great information, and I'm sure our sellers will find it beneficial.
All right. Thank you.
Coming up next, your calls. Audrey, now don't faint. Brace yourself.
What? What?
But we have a call and an email this week. Yes.
I can't believe it. Persistence pays off, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, shall we start with the email?
Sure. This email came in from Bill. His eBay user ID, I believe, is eclectic. He sent it to sellingonebay.com. Audrey, here. Will you read what Bill has said?
Sure thing. Hi, kids. Sincerely hope this new year finds wonderful things for you both. Love the show. Always informative and perhaps more important, very motivational.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thanks, Bill. That's nice.
We like it.
Okay. Bill says, moving from this is a fun home eBay business to a brick and mortar eBay business. Many exciting changes in the works. By the way, I listen to your podcast while sanding, painting, and patching. So if you get a little dust on you, it's me.
Go on.
He continues. So I could really use your collective advice. My store, by order of inventory and sales, is women's apparel, some shoes, some accessories, men's apparel, and after that, it's a bit of this and that. I had planned to reduce my store categories down to the basics of women's apparel, men's apparel, home, and collectible, thinking that this would get more items in front of a shopper rather than making too easy to simply find, view, and run.
Yeah, I get what he means.
Okay, great, because I don't. That was until I listened to your recent podcast by an eBayer who has an antique store. I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. Was this Lynn Drawley?
It could have been Lynn, yes. I think it might have been.
That was until I listened to your recent podcast with an eBayer who runs an antique store and ran category sales. Wow, what a light bulb moment. Appeal directly to shoppers looking for a specific item with a sale in that category. Easier for me to create a promotion, a few clicks, a quick browse to edit, and done. Now I'm thinking perhaps increasing the number of categories would be more specific, i.e. not just women's dresses, but women's work dresses, women's cruise wear, etc. I think that would be a better business decision. As my old aunt, I don't know, would say, I'm perplexed. Thank you again, Bill O'Donnell.
I didn't get the I don't know at first.
I don't know. He's got an aunt.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's very cute.
Right. Well, Bill, good question. And I think you're on the right track. I would definitely recommend having more categories. I do that as well. And in fact, my categories in my store drill down to the most absurd level.
Like what?
Well, I sell, or I have in the past, sold a lot of men's shirts. And we've talked on the radio show and on the podcast about the lack of standardization in the measurements, the sizing of men's clothing, all clothing, but especially men's and women's shirts and dresses. For example, an XL might be a 50-inch chest, or it could be a 48 chest, and that's a big difference. So you can't just go by the sizing. So I have a category in my store under men's clothing, clothing, shoes, accessories, men's clothing, men's shirts for each chest measurement, starting from like 42 inches up to 60 inches, so that you can find all the shirts that I've previously measured in my inventory. Say you know you can fit into a 50-inch shirt. That's what fits comfortably as a chest measurement. Rather than have to go and open each one, I categorize all my 50-inch shirts in that store category so you can find them all at once.
I do something similar.
What do you do?
I sell mainly my own clothes out of my closet, and I sell for a couple friends here and there that donate stuff to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I categorize by kind of the traditional stuff, like women's clothing,
sure.
And then within that I have dresses, shirts, pants, etc. But I also categorize by size.
Because, so, like me.
Right, because I'm assuming that a shopper is going to hit my store, mm-hmm. kind of look at my banner, look at my branding, and say, I kind of like this girl's style. Maybe I could shop from her.
Right.
So then, on my store homepage, on the left-hand side, you're going to see the traditional categories. Then you're going to see items sort of by size. If you're a size 12 shopper and you like my stuff, you can hit size 12 and everything will pop up.
Just like I do with my shirts.
Right. So, but you do it even more detailed because you're talking about measurements.
Measurements in inches.
I'm talking about women's kind of standard sizes, and there's lots of variation there, of course, so you got to be careful.
But that's a better start than nothing.
Right.
And so if someone knows they fit into a size 4 dress, they want to see all your size 4 dresses. They don't want to see a size 2 or a size 10.
Yes, and I also do that with my shoes. I don't do that with accessories. Like, let's pretend that I'm selling costume jewelry. I will break that down by earrings, necklace, bracelet, etc.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming that if somebody's shopping for a bracelet, for instance, and they kind of stumble on my store and they look at my branding and they look at my cover images and they go, oh, I kind of like her style. Let's see what she's got in bracelets. Bam-o, she hits the bracelets link and then there they all are.
So,
yes, Bill, I think the answer is the more and more and more that you can refine your categories to be very specific, the better.
And don't rely just on top level categories. You can build a category structure that's nested under top levels. And I think you can go down at least 4 or 5 levels, but utilize that so that what you have to think of is you're making it easier for buyers to find exactly what they want. And if you have just your top level categories, that may be somewhat helpful, but you can go the extra mile and be super helpful for those buyers that are looking for specific things in specific sizes, for example, by providing those sub categories that they can search into.
My advice here would be think how a shopper thinks.
Exactly.
Right? So when they hit your storefront, it's disorganized and it's, and if I have to click into each individual item to understand the size or the other attributes, sorry, I'm going to bail. I need that organization on the left-hand side with categories so that I can quickly get to what I'm looking for.
Excellent advice. Well, Bill, I hope that answered the question for you. We definitely recommend that you add more store categories.
And then do the category sales, as Lynn suggested, because that's a great way to bring that buyer in.
So let's go to the call that we had. Now, let's listen to that call. This comes in from a seller whose name I believe is Ali. Here's the call.
Hello, my name is Ali Butashi. My ID number is Afro-Inter. And I had a question about this new minimalist trend that is going lately, which having people getting rid of a lot of their stuff. And a lot of eBay sellers say that is a good thing, because obviously there's a bunch of inventories in the Goodwills and stuff. My question is, in that case, wouldn't that also bring down our sales? Because if people are getting rid of stuff, they're not necessarily buying more. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. That was an interesting question. I've read about this woman. What's her name?
Marie Kondo.
It's like a huge phenomenon on Facebook. She's getting everyone to throw out their junk.
So she did a book about 2 years ago, and then on January 1, she launched a series with Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't watched it. I've seen the trailer, and I have seen sellers talking about it in Facebook groups. And so the idea is to, as I understand it, by the way, I read about 20 pages of the book and then threw it out, so I'm not an expert.
Threw it out or gave it away?
It's actually sitting on my shelf, so it's doing exactly the opposite of the advice within it.
It's cluttering your desktop.
Exactly. Right? So basically the idea is that you only hold on to those things that spark joy in your life or are useful, right? So, and spark joy means you pick up every item that you're considering getting rid of and you say, does this spark joy in my life?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, or if it's not useful, throw it out.
Oh, not useful is another one? Because just about everything I pick up in my house sparks joy, except the broom and the vacuum cleaner.
Well, but those are useful.
Yeah.
And I encourage you to use those.
Well, someone else uses them. I pay her.
Very nice.
But yeah, I this would be hard for me. But I think what Ali's talking about is now this is becoming such a big trend. He thinks it indicates that people are jumping on this bandwagon about getting organized and getting rid of stuff. And that means that buying has stopped. Has it?
I would doubt it. First of all, I don't believe that Americans in general are minimalists.
No.
And I don't believe that the entire population is going to pick up on this trend.
Exactly.
And it's right there, the word. It's a trend. This will be gone in 6 months and something else will pop up.
Of course.
So I feel like it's a of-the-moment phenomenon. And yes, people are probably getting rid of some of their stuff and going to a more minimalist lifestyle. But you know what? That, to me, is just an inventory opportunity.
Exactly. Explain.
Well, I don't have any science on this. I'm just predicting what I think will happen.
We're not scientists.
No, we are not.
We work for eBay.
Well, people will donate stuff to thrift stores.
Yes.
eBay sellers, resellers in particular, will go to those thrift stores. There will be more inventory to choose from.
That's right.
And eBay sellers, being the savvy resellers that they are, will pick up on the best items out of those, you know, that have been donated.
Sure.
My guess is that this trend will actually result in better quality donations than kind of a base level donation that's happened up until now.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And to me, it seems like it's a great opportunity for sellers like Ali.
Right.
To pick up some of our extra inventory.
And the other thing I wanted to say about minimalist is a lot of the ethos around minimalist is quality versus quantity. So you can imagine that if, let's pretend I'm a minimalist, which by the way, I am not. A minimalist.
I can vouch for that. I've been to your house.
Yeah. A minimalist will buy a really great pair of like $150 well-made leather shoes and wear them forever versus my model, which is
6,000 pairs of shoes
that were $20 each and hurt my feet. So what I'm trying to say is if minimalists they want to hold on to quality items, right?
Yeah.
And so as a reseller, your job here in this minimalist movement is to go out and find that great stuff, that high quality, real leather stuff. I'm thinking of shoes or briefcases, that kind of thing, and bring it to eBay so that another minimalist can buy that quality product and hold on to it.
I can imagine that if you were looking for a business model, what you could do to ride this trend immediately is start a consignment business.
Yeah.
Where, hey, don't donate it. You can sell it on eBay. I'll sell it for you and give you 50%. You know, that's the usual. That's a big cut.
Yes.
Right? So clean out and make some money. So you could actually advertise in your local market. Marie Kondo says, get rid of your stuff because it's not giving you joy. Let it give joy to someone else.
Let it give joy
to someone else. Pass it on to the world. Pay it forward to someone who wants it.
In my own life, I come across this phenomenon. This was before I was selling on eBay, is that I wanted to donate something. Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, I wanted to get rid of something.
Right.
But I didn't want to donate it because it actually had value in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I didn't know what to do with it. So it just took up a lot of space.
Right.
But now I could reach out to an eBay reseller and get some value out of that.
Yeah.
And not feel bad about leaving money on the table.
You know, we used to have a program called Trading Assistance. And a couple of years back, we ended it. I wish we'd started up again. It's a great business model. It never dies. It takes a lot of work and a lot of dedication. But we've had Lynn Drawley on the show, and she's opened up a consignment shop mm-hmm. in Ventura, California, that's doing really great. So it could be a potential business model for you. I hope, Allie, that answered your question. What do you think?
I think we've nailed it, if I do say so myself.
We're telling you more inventory in eBay is not a bad thing. And it doesn't hurt any other sellers, and it definitely doesn't discourage buyers. They'll always be buying. If anything, extra inventory, like Audrey says, increases the opportunity for a variety of items on the site. And that's always good for buyers.
Yep. More to pick from.
Mm-hmm.
Just make sure your inventory is presented and priced to its best advantage.
Exactly.
Okay. So if you have a question you would like us to address here on the podcast, you can either email it to us at sellingonebay@ebay.com.
Or you can call it into us at 888-723-4630. Just dial that number, 888-723-4630. You can dial it day or night, anytime, any day of the week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Follow the prompts to leave your question and your details, and you may hear your call on the air.
All right. Coming up next is what we call on the inside the outro.
Oh, Audrey, you're giving away podcast inside secrets again, you rascal.
That's what I do best.
Okay, the outro. And that's our show for this week. I'm itching to get into my pile of inventory so I can start evaluating it.
I can help. It's easy.
What?
Let me evaluate it for
you. Okay, so what are you going
to
do?
Just re-donate it back to all the thrift stores.
Well, that sure, that seems a bit drastic, though. I mean, some of my inventory is still viable, I think.
Dude.
Yeah.
I peeked inside your garage last month.
What?
You have some big problems to address.
Oh, come on. Stop at that. Are you saying my vast assortment of unlisted shirts is a dud?
I don't have to say that. You just did.
Well, you cut me to the quick, woman. I'm definitely going to list that pile of shirts soon.
When?
In the spring.
That sounds like a plan.
Of 2025.
Oh, dude, you're the worst. Of course, if you want to be on the podcast, you can be part of the show when you call us at 888-723-4630.
That's right. You call us on 888-723-4630, and you can call that hotline any time of day, any day of the week. Just leave a question or comment, and we just might put it on the air.
Are you shy?
Well, no.
Are you uncomfortable putting your voice on the air?
Obviously not.
Not us. Not to worry. We have our very own email address where you can send your questions if you prefer. It's sellingonebay@ebay.com. That's sellingonebay@ebay.com.
I love that email address. Hey, do you miss seeing people other than your family? Do you long for peer-to-peer contact? Do you have stories and tips that you're dying to share with other eBay sellers? Well, then you should be attending a local eBay seller meetup in your area. At seller meetups, sellers share tips, stories, and insights, and even complaints. You can see meetups that are scheduled on our special eBay community page for meetups at www.ebay.com/meetups.
And don't forget to tune into our weekly live video stream on the eBay for Business Facebook page. That starts every Wednesday at 12:30 Pacific time. Go to facebook.com/ebayforbusiness.
And that's our show for this week.
The eBay podcast team, Director of Community, Brian Burke.
Community Manager, Alan Aisbitt.
Community Manager and Technology and News Editor, Doug Smith.
Marketing Strategist, Liz Austin.
Editor and Chief and Co-host, that's you, Griff.
Script Writer and Co-host and Top of Everything, Audrey Tracy.
I certainly try.
You do.
We hope you are now sufficiently inspired to start evaluating your inventory and perhaps making some exciting changes to the mix.
Yes.
Download and listen every week to the Selling on eBay podcast for the leg up your business on eBay needs to compete and prosper in the new year.
Selling on eBay is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.
So, Griff, would you consider yourself a minimalist?
No, I have to have 1,000 of everything, so no, I'm not a minimalist. But I'm not a hoarder.